Thank you, Dr. Patel. Please hold your questions until the end of the session and we'll open the floor for questions. Our next speaker is Mr. Meade. Mr. Meade serves as Senior Public Health Systems Researcher in NORC Public Health Research Department. Mr. Meade is responsible for NORC projects in the areas of rural health, public health systems, and public health preparedness. He has conducted recent public health system research exploring the impacts of ACA on the state and local health departments, accreditation, and public health workforce, among others. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Meade.
All right, thank you so much. So I have no financial relationships to disclose. I also have one other disclaimer. This is a study that was funded by the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Planning and Evaluation. They always like for me to say that the views that I'm going to discuss are my own, so blame me and not them. Always important. So I'm going to tell you about this study that we did. We have been looking at the impacts of the Affordable Care Act on state and local public health programs, in particular on state and local health departments. Really, the focus has been to assess the scope of ACA on state and local health departments, look at how expanded insurance coverage and enhanced benefits may change the way individuals seek care and where they get that care, and to look at the changes to public health programs that may result from the Affordable Care Act broadly, but also health insurance expansion more narrowly. A little bit about the study. I'm going to go through some of this quickly. This is really just to show you that it's an iterative study. The idea is that we have a technical expert panel, a group of really smart people who do a lot of research in this area. They have helped us to define the research questions and the states to visit to explore these research questions. We then do site visits in those states. We try to look at a lot of these different issues, bring that information back to the advisory group so that they can help interpret those findings, tell us what it means to them. And we use that to refine the study along the way and look at different states along the way. These are the states that we have been to so far. We are currently in the second phase of our study. We have two more states to go to, and we're currently recruiting those states. This is from the first year. Essentially, we've tried to get a very diverse set of states. We want to have states that are reflective of a lot of different types of governance, populations, different regions of the country, and also expanding and not expanding. I will say it was a little difficult to recruit non-expansion states, particularly in the first year of the study. The first year of the study was right as the Affordable Care Act was being rolled out. Some of you may recall that didn't go so smoothly, so we would call up states and say, will you talk to us about the Affordable Care Act? And most states hung up really quickly because they didn't see anything good that could possibly come of that. I will say, as part of that the states that you see here are the courageous ones. They are the ones that really were very open. Every state has been wonderful to us in inviting us in and letting us look at what they're doing and really expressing both the opportunities that they've been able to leverage as well as their fears and concerns. That's also been true in the second year. These are the states that we're currently visiting. Again, we have two more. We're currently trying to recruit North Carolina and Vermont. Hopefully those will go well. Just a little bit of context here. So the Affordable Care Act was really designed to affect the public's health through the healthcare delivery system. And I think that's really the key piece here contextually, is that the Affordable Care Act was about healthcare delivery. It wasn't really about public health. It affected public health by requiring preventive services to be delivered through the healthcare delivery system. Now, for better or for worse, many of those are public health are preventive services that public health was otherwise providing. Now, I will say, my own opinion here, that it is more rational for people to get that care in their usual source of care. It has been a good thing for people to access that care there. But as that location has shifted, the dollars haven't necessarily shifted within public health to allow public health to pursue new things. So the way I describe it is that in many instances, public health was providing a set of of services that were these are the categorical services that we hear about, often funded through CDC, that were deemed so important that even people without insurance should have access to these services for public health benefit. Things like immunization, things like cancer screenings, STD testing, a lot of things that there was a public value to the individual getting that clinical care. Now that these are covered benefits, the question is, will they continue to seek that care in the health department? Should they continue to seek that care in the health department? And what happens if they're no longer going to the health department? What happens to that funding? What happens to that source of care? So those are the kinds of questions that we've been interested in. This is probably a little bit of the same thing. So we've been interested in looking at how expanded insurance coverage affect access to those clinical preventive services, particularly in states that are expanding, but not only in states that are expanding, because in many of those non-expansion states, there's still expansion. It's just not at the same volume or uptake of coverage through the marketplace in particular. So again, it may affect demand for those services. And we want to look at the implications of those shifts in terms of how those services are funded. Will CDC continue to provide those services? There has been no discussion that they won't, but this is certainly a fear that we hear. Will health departments want to become providers of those services under the Affordable Care Act? That is certainly an option for many health departments. And will that vary based on Medicaid expansion? So those are some of the different pieces that we've been looking at. So essentially, health departments can do one of two things. This is, you know, public health at a crossroads. Health departments may want to expand their coverage of clinical preventive services. Now there is a payer for these services. So maybe we should expand those services and now bill for those services. For health departments that serve in areas where there is our provider shortages, this may make sense. There may be new demand because people now have insurance that they're not able to use because there aren't enough providers. So maybe that's a role that health departments could play. But those health departments now need to be able to bill for those services. Getting billing up and running is not an easy lift for health departments. It changes the way health departments do their job. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit based on some of the feedback that we've gotten from health departments. And again, it may be somewhat dependent on the state's decision to expand Medicaid in terms of the volume of people who could come in. Conversely, some health departments may choose to divest themselves of those clinical services and refocus on core public health activities, population health. They may be able to support outreach and enrollment. They may be able to do patient navigation. There may be other roles that they can do that are wraparound roles as well. But again, the other option is, do we focus on population health and divest the clinical services? One of my concerns with this is that I think the answer to these questions really depends on where you live and the access that's available in your community. And again, my concern is that our rural health departments are going to choose one path, our urban health departments are going to choose another path because they have the luxury of being able to do that. And we end up with two very diverse public health systems. And I think that has broad implications for our field of public health. So that's something that I think we ought to be looking at more. So I want to go into a little bit specifically of what we have heard from the states. This is what they have told to us. So again, all of them have expressed concerns about funding, not a surprise. They have all seen declines. So every state we've gone to has seen declines in immunizations. They've seen declines in breast and cervical cancer screenings. They're seeing the volume going down. They're still getting the categorical grants, but it begs the question, what happens to this funding in the future? They're very concerned about that. Billing for services. All of the health departments are expanding their capacity to bill, but as I mentioned, billing is not easy. Not all services are amenable to billing. In some of the states we went to, they said, look, if this were a profitable service, everyone would be doing it. We're billing for services that are money losers. So we still need to do it. We may be able to bill, getting something's better than nothing, but at the end of the day, this isn't making money for us. We're not able to even make our ends meet with this service. And then again, it changes how health departments do business. And I think this is something we really need to look at, both in terms of how we train our staff, but also in how we recruit staff. Because a lot of people got into public health because this isn't what they wanted to do. And it changes the dynamic of the public health worker as well. Because now they have to ask about insurance status. Health departments have to change their accounting practices. They have to, instead of knowing you get $500,000 from CDC on day one of the fiscal year, now we've got to project how much revenue we're going to get in. We need to reconcile our bills. We need to have money on hand to pay people until the third-party payers pay those bills. Changes a lot about how health departments work. This is one of those quotes. I won't read it all to you, but that bottom, the part at the bottom is really, I think, the key. We're becoming more business-oriented. That may or may not be a bad thing, but it changes the context of public health, and it's something we need to think about. This is from the Nature Forces of Change survey. I just wanted to show this because almost all health departments in the country, the majority, are billing for services or planning to increase billing. And that's really where we are right now. So billing has become, whether we like it or not, a big part of how public health does do business. So future role for public health in providing clinical services. As I mentioned, some health departments may continue to be a provider of service. Some may want to expand that because they now have access to payment for a service that they didn't otherwise have access to. This may vary by geography. I already mentioned some of that. And particularly for those rural health departments, some of them said that those health department services help them maintain capacity to support other population health services. So that service has dividends for other public health programs. It gets people through the door. People talked about touch points. So you get somebody in for immunization, but you can talk to them about other things going on at home. Do they need this service? Do they need that service? So again, these services really build off of each other. I usually use the analogy of a game of Jenga, that all of these different public health programs are cobbled together to create your public health infrastructure, and as you start to pull one out, at some point you're going to destabilize that infrastructure and it's all going to come down. So I don't think we're there yet. I mean, maybe we're getting close in some states, but we have to start to think about what is that basic infrastructure that we need and how do we fund it to be stable so that it can do all of these important things. Secondary impacts is another thing that we've heard a lot about. There are concerns about what this game of Jenga does to emergency preparedness. So the example is if you lose your public health nurses because you're doing fewer immunizations and then you need to do a mass immunization campaign, do you have the surge capacity to do so? So again, those are the kinds of secondary impacts we've heard about. Sustainability of key public health services. There are important functions that public health does, like immunization, like disease surveillance, a lot of things that may or may not have a categorical grant tied to it, but we need to have some stable way to fund those services, and if we're not cobbling it together from these other services, we need to figure out some other way. And then the other opportunities for public health. So again, I don't want to just be negative here. There are opportunities that health departments have talked about. Contracting with providers and health plans, billing for services is certainly one of those. Participating with ACOs, although we've heard mixed stories about that, it's not all rosy. And really redefining the role of public health within the community and how it contributes to community health. And then participating in planning with CHAS and CHIPS, community health assessments and community health improvement plans. And then this is really, I think, the last slide I want to show, but I think to me this really kind of tells that story about the diverging path that public health may take. This is also from the Nature Forces of Change survey. The blue is health departments reducing services in areas, and the pink is health departments expanding services in areas. And what is fascinating to me is that for many of these services, health departments are both expanding and reducing. So 20% of local health departments are reducing immunizations, 13% are expanding. 14% are reducing MCH, 14% are expanding. 11% are reducing chronic disease screening and treatment, 13% are expanding. So again, this tells me that we are seeing health departments choosing these divergent paths. I would guess, and I think we would need to study this, but I would guess that a lot of this is based on geography. I will share one quick story with you from one of the site visits because to me it really was a case in point. So we went to one state where they had us meet with three of their local health departments. One was urban, one was very rural, and one was somewhere in the middle. The urban health department was talking about how they were able, they had this wealth of other providers in their community. They were able to completely divest their clinical services. They had ample local tax base because they were in a relatively well-off community, and they were able to refocus everything within their health department on population health services. The rural health department had one provider organization in their community that bolted up the doors one night and left town. And the entire community of 20,000, the county of 20,000, lost all their access to care. And the health department within 4 months stood up a full primary care clinic and became the provider of clinical services in the community. And the state, which I thought was really cool, the state actually presented these as their as two of their three examples of star health departments who were meeting community need. But again, completely opposite path based on geography and access. And I think, again, that's potentially the path that we're going down. So I will leave you with that. Thank you.